Forest Resources have come to order. It's May 1st, 3:12 p.m. Members present are Co-Chair Davidson, Representative Navarre, Hudson, and Sharp, and Chairman Menard, and Representative Vice Chair Jacko has stepped out just for a minute. Since we do have majority caucus at 3:30, and we do want to be on time, that we'll probably take up SJR 62. We'll start with that, and it's my understanding from staff that the other
I haven't seen a CS.
CS on that. So let's start with SJR 62. Sandra?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Health Resources Committee. My name is Sandra Borbridge, and I'm here representing Senator Binkley, who is the sponsor of Resolution SJR 62, which is relating to the bycatch of Bering Sea herring in the Grandfish Troll Fishery. This resolution was introduced at the request of the fishermen in Nelson Island and Nunavak Island. The Bering Sea herring stock are declining and are projected to decline below threshold levels where commercial fishery would be allowed in 1990. According to a study by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in January of this year, the herring bycatch exploitation rates have increased from less than 2% in 1983 to 4-5% in 1989, and without any further actions taken by the council or the state, would increase further in 1990. The Nelson Island communities have experienced difficulties in the past in their subsistence herring harvest, and they are very concerned that without any action taken on the bycatch of by the groundfish trawl fleets, that they would begin to experience difficulties again with the herring subsistence fishery. In 1 year of studies, they did project that the per capita harvest for herring for subsistence use in Tunumic in Nelson Island was 1,091 pounds per capita. Herring is a daily part of the diet there. The representatives from the Nelson Island and Nunavak Island communities have appeared before the North Pacific Council Fishery Management Council twice this year to ask, number one, that they take emergency action on setting a cap on the bycatch of herring by the groundfish trawl fleet in the Bering Sea, and number two, that they begin the process of putting in place regulations that would limit bycatch on herring in the same fishery. And they were successful in getting an emergency bycatch cap put on last week during the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. The only commercial fishery they have here aside from herring is halibut that has been decreased this year as far as their quota. The original SJR 62 was intended to request the council to take action as far as an emergency cap and also to look at putting permanent regulations in place. They did that. There are amendments before you that Senator Binkley has requested be added to this resolution, and they are in support of the emergency actions, and they are changing the focus, as I mentioned, from requesting the council take action to requesting that the Secretary of Commerce and also the Alaska Region for National Marine Fisheries Service implement the action taken by the council last week in Anchorage. So, anyhow, we are asking that you look favorably on these amendments, and if there are any questions, Earl Krieger is here from the Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you. Earl, did you have a response that you wanted to make, or were you just going to answer questions?
Because of your time constraint, I can just answer questions, because the department deals with this as they moved ahead with this. I would say the amendments are important since the form has changed from the council to the secretarial review, and there is a chance where...
Earl, why don't you come up and thanks, Sandra. Why don't you come up and state your name, who you're representing, so we can get it on the record, okay, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Earl Krieger. I'm the Extended Jurisdiction Program Manager for the state of Alaska dealing with offshore fisheries. I guess my comments would include the fact that the amendments suggested by Senator Binkley are apropos since the council has recently passed emergency rule, and the next step in that implementation of that rule into emergency regulation would be the secretarial review. there is always an opportunity where members of the industry who will be affected could petition the secretary and slow up that review process. So, in fact, it is probably very useful for this body to encourage the secretary for a speedy implementation of that emergency rule.
Okay, are there any questions from committee members? And thank you very much, Mr. Earl. Appreciate it. Co-chair Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the, have we already adopted the substitute for sponsor, substitute for senator resolution?
We haven't adopted the amendments.
We don't have to.
That's the way it came in.
I would move adoption of the amendments offered before us and incorporate them into Senate Joint Resolution 62.
There's been a motion made to adopt the amendments. Is there any objections? Then the amendments have been adopted. Is there any further discussion before the committee? Then the chair would entertain the motion. Co-chair Davidson.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Joint Resolution 60 out of committee within the
62.
For the record, committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution number 62, House Resources out of committee within the recommendation.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the resolution moves to the committee. The next item that we will bring up is SJR 50, and we do have a committee substitute for that, and SJR 50 is relating to rule proposed by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service relating to marine mammals. Where's Carl? Carl, there you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Carl Olds with the staff of Senator Jaroff. SJR 50 was originally introduced in response to a rule the United States Fish and Wildlife Service proposed relating to native take of sea otters. The reason for the CS is because the rule is no longer a proposed rule. It has now been adopted by the Fish and Wildlife Service over much protest and disagreement. Late in April, they went ahead and published a Federal Register notice saying that they would be implementing that rule. So the CS just addresses that this is after the fact now, and it's protest and action that has been taken by the Fish and Wildlife Service. The new CS necessitates a title change because the original rebuilt refers to a proposed rule. And, of course, the rule is no longer proposed. The main issue here that we're addressing is that the Marine Mammal Protection Act provides that prohibition on taking of marine mammals shall not apply with respect to the taking of any marine mammal by any Indian, Aleut, or Eskimo who resides in Alaska and who dwells on the coast of the North Pacific Ocean or the Arctic Ocean if such taking is for subsistence purposes or is done for the purposes of creating and selling authentic native articles of handicrafts and clothing. To read that seems like a pretty broad exemption, but according to the Fish and Wildlife Service, somewhere in there, I guess written in invisible ink, it says, except sea otters. And this has been the whole disagreement, is the interpretation of the act. The language seems real clear, exemption for all marine mammals, but the Fish and Wildlife Service insists that for a variety of complicated reasons, this language does not apply to sea otters and that therefore natives should be prohibited from taking sea otters for purposes of creating and selling native handicrafts and clothing. The rule was strongly opposed. There were groups throughout Alaska that protested it. In the Federal Register notice that was published in late April, as a matter of fact, it mentions that out of a total of 2,250 written comments received, there were 1,248 in support of the rule, and approximately 96% of these comments were from outside Alaska. Written comments in opposition to the rule numbered 1,002, and all but two were from individuals or organizations in Alaska. So you can see how the basic breakdown went on the comments, but in the final rulemaking, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided not to go with the position of people in Alaska. And so this resolution is just once again expressing the legislature's dismay over their action. I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from committee members? Do we want to Representative Hudson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Carl, then, say the rule has went ahead even though we did protest it. So what we're doing now is asking to revisit the issue and to reverse that ruling. Is that
yes.
Right? Yes. Thank you.
Do the committee members want a couple of minutes to finish reading this on the...
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt this committee substitute, House committee substitute, in 5190. Don't we have to have that before, sir?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, is there any objection? Hearing none, then the CS is before it.
I have a question on the CS. Well, I'm looking at who it's being sent to, and I might just suggest that we add Senator Inouye's name on here. Isn't he the chairman of a select committee or something that is studying Indian affairs? Or?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Navarro. Yeah, I can't recall his exact committee, but yeah, it's Indian Affairs.
And he's also been a champion of, yes, of the rights. So I would just suggest that we add it, add him, and also if there's a companion on the House side, that we also copy them. And I don't know who they'd be.
So you're making that in the form of a motion?
Yes, I'll make that as a motion. We can find the names.
Conceptual, so you want to restate it again?
Yeah, just I know that Senator Inouye has traveled in Alaska and has been a champion of the native cultural and heritage protection, so whoever is the counterpart on the House side, and I don't know who that would be, but I know that we at least ought to send it to Inouye, and if there's someone else on the House side, to them also.
So as a conceptual amendment. Is there any objections? Then hearing none, then that is adopted. Then we have, this is going to require a title change also. We have that right here. So we do have a concurrent resolution that's requesting a title change. Is there any further discussion? Then what is the will of the committee?
I make a motion that we move House Committee Substitute Percentage Joint Resolution number 50 out of Committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, then that moves out of Committee with individual recommendations. Is there any...
Mr. Chairman, don't you have to move HCR?
No, you have to introduce it.
Oh, I know.
The committee will have to introduce it. Gotcha. Tomorrow, probably.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Then what I'd like to do is take a recess. Representative Navarro, how long do you think Cox will go? Recess to the chair?
12 hours.
5? We'll be back here at 5?
No, 5 hours.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We'll recess back here until 5 o'clock. What I would like to take up at that time is I would like to take up the...
We'll be talking money.
SB 213 and SB 544. And if the amendments and everything are ready for the municipal SB 359, we'll consider that there.
Yeah, okay. Maryland just got them delivered.
Okay, so that would be the order. That would come back starting at 5. Resources Committee will come back to order. The business that we have before us is CS for Senate Bill 213, an act relating to the leasing of state land for recreational facilities development. Who do we have to testify? Is
Lisa was going to, she just wanted to get Mike Waller.
No. Okay, is
no.
Mr. Gustafson, were you going to make any comments on it or answer any questions? Is there any questions? Does anybody have?
Name a tree after you.
Otherwise, we're going to have.
This was just going to present some comments.
Right? Maybe two.
Maybe a price on that for that
matter. Yes.
Mike.
Did you want to make some comments on this 213?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're here. Right.
Okay.
ahead and start.
Go ahead, state your name, who you're representing, so we can have it on the record, please.
Okay, I'm Lisa Yeager, and I'm representing the Town of Chief Conference. We're real concerned about the bill that's in front of the committee right now, as I'm sure everybody here realizes. In our region, which is the Joyon boundaries, which is most of the interior of Alaska, we have two area plans, and then we have a lot of state land that's outside of area plans. And we've run into, over the years, a lot of interesting situations with the land disposal program, so we know what kind of interest there is out there with the public with land disposal and this type of a program, too. We know that there's a lot of public interest out there in terms of how these things, where these things are placed. The basic problem that we have is the potential conflict for the resources out there, of course. If you put a hunting and fishing lodge out there, it puts competition for resources with our guys that are subsistence hunting and fishing out there. And that's sort of the bottom line basic concern that we have. Now, originally, in some earlier versions of this bill, we were totally opposed to it. There was a lot of discretion there for the department to have just too much discretion without public input, especially early in the process. And we had an executive board resolution and a full board resolution, both opposing the bill, period. Okay, the bill has changed considerably since that time, and we feel that it needs some very definite fine-tuning in order to bring it into the focus so that our guys have the kind of input that they need. Right now, the plans in the region, the planning teams can't tell you where leasing is allowed under the plan. There was a lot of public input in the plans. They took a long time to develop, and we're real pleased with lots of aspects of those plans. But I was at all the public meetings for like our Canada Basin Area Plan, and we never discussed recreational facility development there at all. It was not discussed. We discussed a lot of land disposals. There were a lot of them. They were very controversial, and we got it into a kind of a shape that the public in our villages could accept, except for a few cases that we're still dealing with. But by and large, we dealt with it through that planning process. And this would work if you were starting right now with a new area plan, and you had this in the back of your mind, and the public had the opportunity to participate right from the start. But you're putting this on top of a plan that's already in existence, and it wasn't discussed during the planning process. The Tanawha Basin Area Plan says that leasing is allowed and is specifically prohibited, and it's just specifically prohibited in certain areas. Okay, then you have to go through and determine if it fits the management intent for a unit in the Chapter 2 guides for the whole plan. So it has to go through kind of a lengthy process to determine if leasing is allowed, and it's not something that that even DNR can tell you right now exactly what would be allowed where. Okay? So we feel basically at this point in time, especially because the plans are already in process and it doesn't really interface very well with this, that an early public notice is real important under 3805-945. The way the bill's written right now, the public notice kicks in after DNR has solicited proposals for development and a developer is already involved in the process. It makes sense to me that a developer that's going in would want to ascertain how much public, where the public is coming from in the first place on this before he sunk a certain amount of money into putting this proposal together and a certain amount of the corporation interest into the plan. So I think at that stage of the game, I'm going to let Mike address, just point a little further and then talk about the best interest finding.
For the record, my name is Mike Wallery, General Counsel for Tanana Chiefs Conference. What we're requesting particularly to understand the issue, I require a certain amount of information relating to the area plan. But there's been some concern that the area plan is an adequate public input into the process. The area plan is not designed, however, to do site-specific planning, such as is contemplated in this bill. What we're asking for is a notice at the time that the decision is made, that the land is identified, and a decision is made to proceed with the RFP. Essentially, to give you a good idea of what we're talking about, you've got two lakes in an area with state land on them. One is developed, and then one is not developed, primarily is being used for subsistence. This is actually based upon an existing situation in the Upper Tananaw. The area plan might say somewhere in this area, these two included within these lakes, we might want to put in a hunting lodge. It makes sense from our particular perspective in one area to put a hunting lodge in on one lake because it's developed and the current uses in the area would be compatible. But in the other area, a hunting lodge would not be compatible with existing subsistence uses in the area. If you have to wait until an RFP is issued and somebody's developed a proposal, a developer who might be led down, basically by the department, down the golden path to put together, to spend the money, to develop a proposal, to put it on one lake, and then find out after the fact that the community and the people in the area are highly resistant to that, it makes a lot more sense to let the developer put the developer on notice right away and the department on notice right away that the other lake is a better idea. So we're asking for notice at the time that the decision to issue the RFP is made. It would provide no additional burden to the developer. It only required a simple notice procedure that exists currently for noticing the public contained in Section 945. It would actually aid in rational development because a developer doesn't sink money into putting together a proposal that is going to engender hostile local opposition. There is concern that we haven't had these problems in the past. And we have to admit that in our area we haven't had that problem in the past because of the personalities within the department. But we have had, prior to this administration, we have had a number of problems in the past based upon the desire of particular people within the department. We don't want to be dependent upon the personalities within the Department of Natural Resources. We're more interested in having a process. We are a society of laws, we're governed by law, and we would like a law to establish a process, a rational process, and not be dependent on whether or not we're getting along personality-wise with somebody in the department. It would not increase litigation because if somebody's going to get mad, they're going to sue you anyways. It makes no difference. The only thing is you have the ability to avoid litigation by getting early input into the process and as to where this site is going to be. Additionally, we're asking for an amendment to the bill to provide for a definition of best interest. Currently, the bill basically requires the commission to make a determination of best interest. We don't know what that means. The statute certainly doesn't say what's in the best interest. What we're proposing is an amendment which would, that in the making a determination of the best interest of the state, that it do a couple of things. One, to encourage ownership, a maximum feasible equity ownership in the facility by citizens of the United States. Constitutionally, we can't give an Alaska preference, but we can give a preference to citizens of the United States in an ownership equity. And what we're asking here is to basically encourage corporations who are involved in foreign corporations who are coming into the state, encourage them to joint venture with Alaska and U.S. Interests. We think that that's in the best interest of the state. Secondly, we're asking that a recreational that there be a consistency determination done with prior existing use in the area. This is already done with regards to OCS development in the development of OCS plans in the state. And the department is quite familiar with the process. And thirdly, we're asking that the public interest be met by the disposal as that is currently defined in AS 3804-010 and 3804-015. These two sections of the law, in the current law, essentially define what the public interest is with regards to the interest of the state in retaining land and the interest of the state in disposing of land. Those are supposed to be current legal requirements, and this just clarifies that the department needs to consider those factors when determining what's in the best interest of the state. There should be no problem with that, given that it's current law. And it just clarifies that the current law applies to these determinations. Therefore, we request that these amendments be considered and added to the bill.
Okay, is there any questions? Then thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else that wants to make comments on this bill? Hearing none, then what we have before us, there are some amendments that we'd like to have discussion on. One of the amendments that I am proposing is the one that Johanna is moving. Yeah, I think maybe we should. Amendment, it would be on page 1, line 26. Johanna, you want to go down the other end and you can walk us through it here, please.
My name is Johanna Munson. I'm representing Menard. Amendment number 1, with the handwritten information at the bottom, essentially would be inserted on line 26. We would delete the first sentence of subsection C there and add in this particular paragraph. The purpose is to create a notice requirement for specific groups of people, particularly people in the local communities, and those are the 1, 2, 3 listed out below would be the individuals who would get that notice: to the municipality if the land is within the boundaries of the municipality, to a regional corporation if the boundaries of the corporation as established by Section 7A of ANCSA encompass the land and the land is outside the municipality, and thirdly, to a village corporation organized under Section 8A of ANCSA if the land is within 25 miles of the village for which the corporation was established and the land is located outside the municipality. Then we could have an other category also, which has been suggested, to, how is it written on yours?
And other entities affected by the specific recreational facilities development.
In other words, have another category to pick up those people who may not fall within this list but yet may be specifically affected. Also in this amendment is a requirement for public notice identifying the location and specific type of recreational facilities development under consideration being published at least twice in a newspaper of general circulation in the state and in a local newspaper in general circulation in the region where the land is located.
Is there any discussion? Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, for discussion purposes, I'll move that we adopt this proposed amendment number 1. And I have some questions on it.
Is there any objection? Go ahead, Representative.
I'd move to amend and discuss it. But to a village corporation organized under 8A of Alaska
I'd change that from 25 miles to 40 miles. Just because 25 miles within some villages isn't very far away at all. There's a, like for example, if it's a village on the in the Brooks Range, 25 miles away is not very far at all. Maybe 40 is not far enough. I don't know.
So you're proposing this as an amendment?
Amendment to the amendment, yes.
Okay. Is there objections?
Boys, what does this go to?
Right here.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's not enough, but that's...
Is there objections?
How many? 45? It's your amendment. 40, what's your recommendation?
40, 40, yeah. With 40 miles, I don't have a problem with 40, 40 miles. No. Fine. Adopted. Any other questions? Representative Devar?
No, I don't have any questions.
That's not mine, but there is an amendment. There are amendments there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have someone brought to my attention some concerns that they have, and I've, at the appropriate time, I'd like to offer those in form of amendment.
Okay. Appropriate time is now.
The time, the hour is now.
Right.
What are you going to do with the one you have? Use the motion on the floor now. Did you adopt this amendment?
It's my understanding we adopted it.
You adopted the amendment to the amendment, but I wasn't sure you
Pardon?
You adopted the amendment to the amendment, but I wasn't sure you adopted the
adopted the
whole thing.
Adopted amendment number one. Do you want
to? You did adopt amendment number one. And what was the amendment to the amendment?
40 miles. Amendment for the amendment was 25 to 40 miles.
Thank you.
In giving notice.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's under I. Under I, the looks like page. Page 5, but it doesn't. It's not tracking I. It's going to be simple rockers.
Representative Navarre.
Yeah, I have a question about the best interest finding here. Gary? My question is that why is the best interest finding come, it seems like it's coming late in the process. After you've already gone through and developed the proposed lease terms and conditions and the proposals are all in, right? Then you determine it. Why don't you determine it before you go through all those steps?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Navarre, the process is structured that way precisely for the purpose that when you go to the public, you want to make sure that you've got all the information on the table for the public to judge the proposed decision. If you did it in the beginning, the only thing the public would have was an inkling that something is being proposed. There wouldn't be any meat on those bones. They wouldn't know what it looked like. There are a lot of considerations that the public wouldn't be able to deal with.
Okay. Is there any further questions of Mr. Gustafson? Maybe you can stay there, Augusta, if you have some further questions on me. Representative Jackal?
I had an amendment here for a best interest finding. On page 2, line 20, after state, insert new language to read pursuant to last statute 3804.
Where are you now?
Page 2, what? Page 2, line 20.
Line 20.
Which is after state?
After where?
No state there.
No state there. Is there any?
Sure.
further, just, does anybody have anything else? Any further discussion, Representative Davis?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I found my place here now. And it's on page 4, section H is what it is. And I believe the members have the amendments in their packet. And I guess for discussion purposes, I'm going to...
Where are you going to put?
Page H after the word state.
Page 4.
After the word state, line 16. All right. I don't have it. It's not. It looks like this. Do people have this? Mm-hmm. All right. Let's just let's take these one at a time. In determining the best interest of the state, the commissioner shall determine the following proposal. So after that, you would add and let's just move. I'll just move this to be included after the word state. These.
Question.
And then object, and we'll discuss it. How's that?
Okay.
All right. The first section. I think I'm. Concern was on the number one. It says the maximum feasible equity ownership of the facility. I think I would change that to be residents of the state of Alaska, so that at least.
Yeah,
it is. Okay. Well, then we'll leave it the way it is. Citizens of the United States, so that if some outside, major outside firm wants to invest in Alaska, great. Well, this may provide an incentive for them to do a joint venture with an Alaskan firm. That's my first argument for the first one. The second one, that the recreational use of the planned facility is consistent with prior existing uses of the surrounding area, so that we don't build a big lodge in an area that's maybe better suited for something other than what it's proposed for. And then the third is that the best interest findings, as determined by AS 3804.
I believe that's just a written determination, best interest findings.
I'll look it up to make sure. So I moved that, and I guess Representative Navarre objected. Now, it may, this grammatically, it may not move in there that easily. But that's my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Then Representative DeVar.
Yeah, I just want to ask Gary what it means.
Mr. Chairman, Representative DeVar. I'm also not sure what it means, but I would like to offer a couple perspectives on the proposed amendments. First of all, number one, whatever it does mean, I see nothing but potential problems. The state of Alaska, on occasion, will contribute its own monetary resources to proposed projects. The best interest determination that is required under state law is not unique to leasing. It's also the same thing for land disposals, for material sales, for timber sales, for oil and gas lease sales. And it gets real dangerous. You start defining what the state's best interest is. It's got its grounding in the Constitution of the state of Alaska whenever we dispose of an interest in state land. I believe number two is consistent with prior uses. That is, in fact, some of the things that we include in the preliminary decision. For instance, on page 3, the top of page 4, we have the effect on traditional and recreational uses of the land that is already addressed in the preliminary decision. We've also got a statement of long-term commitments on fish, wildlife, and other resources, and a statement of alternatives. And number 3, I just frankly believe we don't need to repeat existing law. Those laws are already in place. In this case, the state of Alaska, the Department of Natural Resources, has to ensure that those are met anyway.
Mr. Chairman, this is, people have asked me to present this because of concerns that they have on the legislation, Gary, it seems to be reasonable. But are you saying that somewhere in this legislation already you have to do a best interest finding on this
A written best interest finding?
Absolutely, through the chair.
Can you show us what that is?
I didn't see this.
Yes, it's page 4, line 16. 14 through 16. After reviewing the comments, those are the public comments we receive under G, commissioner shall make a final determination whether the proposed lease will best serve the best interests of the state.
So that's a written,
that's correct.
Written determination.
That's correct.
Representative Moore.
And is that as defined in 3804.010 and 015? Or is that something different, best interests?
Perhaps we could get somebody to remind us all what's the exact language in those. Those are. Before I comment. Do we have a statute book?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Okay.
But my question would be then, is this the best interest finding that you do for other, like, leases and disposals and things like that?
Yes, it is.
Same
and that's covered in, same. That's covered in the language on line 14 through 16.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion?
The determinations are public interest in making land available to private use. And public interest in retaining state land and public ownership.
Okay.
Those are the two you make to it. Those two findings. You find your best interest finding would cover these two sections.
Yeah, we have to do that anyway, Representative Davis.
In addition to other things?
Yes, there are always other things. Mm-hmm.
And you feel that number two is covered in the top of the page. Says traditional and recreational uses, but where does it sort of speak to the prior existing uses of the surrounding area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, I believe that's covered under traditional uses of the land. At the very top of page 4, line 1.
So you feel that's the same thing?
I do.
Consistent with prior existing uses of the surrounding area. You feel that's the same language?
I do. That's my personal opinion. I also would add that when the land use plan is done for the particular area, recreation and traditional uses are addressed through the land use planning process in addition.
Well, I'm not doing very well, but you're doing a good job of defending your building. And your response, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me this opportunity. And the response or the concern, I guess, Mr. Gustafson, was for number one was the concern about the some of these people, like you've dealt with in the past, that have large owners of multinationals from someplace else and provide some incentive for them to work in cooperation with. Excuse me, I got distracted. With large multinationals to have them give some incentive to these joint ventures. You want to show that part around? So that's the intent on that one, and I don't know if maybe that's best handled someplace else. But that there isn't anything in this legislation that does speak to that that concern. Right?
Correct, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis. I'm just a little nervous about embracing that in this legislation, given the fact that it doesn't exist anywhere else in state law, to my knowledge. And I'd certainly like to have an opinion from the Department of Law as to whether what effect it would have on this or any other legislation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I'm going to withdraw that. I don't want to put this to a vote because I have a feeling I'm going out of flames, but I'll do some research on this first section, and if winner, if this bill goes to the floor, I'll propose another bill.
Okay.
You may have better success than I did this afternoon.
Okay.
Okay.
Off an amendment on for page, I hope we got in the right place this time. Page 1, line 14 after the last statute 3805. Page 1, line 14,
right?
Insert
land identified shall be consistent with the area recreational management plan.
Okay. Is there comments? Mr. Gustafson, isn't that addressed in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jacko, I believe. I didn't quite hear you. Did you say recreational management
plan? Right. Area recreational management plan.
A recreational management plan like Nishigek and Old Chapman is a regional land use plan, which is covered in the first, that same sentence. They're one and the same.
Do you have that?
I'm not sure it is.
Pardon? I mean, do you want to present that amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and state it so we have it. Are you have copies of this to pass around? Okay, it says that after page 14, or page 1, line 14, after 3805, it says land identified shall be consistent with the area recreation management plan.
I think the intent here, and maybe this covers it and maybe not, the intent is that the land, whatever is proposed for the land, be consistent with the recreational management plan. I think that's what the intent is, and if that is the intent, it probably is best covered under the best interest finding or the preliminary decision under Section G.
Mr. Gustafson, do you have any comments? Have you seen the passes on?
Mr. Chairman, the only comment is that I believe the bill already does that. Certainly the intent not only myself, but those we've worked with throughout this process have imagined this bill, is that there has to be an adopted land use plan, and that the commissioner cannot proceed unless the adopted land use plan, be it a regional or a site-specific plan, allows for this activity. And this says land identified shall be consistent with the area recreation management plan. I believe it's already covered, and a recreational management plan like Nushigak Mulchatna or the Matanuska Recreational Rivers Plan is a regional land use plan.
I believe that this would make sure that it is.
I don't know if it's consistent with the spot where it's supposed to go into the bill. Representative Barker.
How about if you moved it up and said on line 12, Gary, if you said the commissioner shall make the identifications through.
If it's in the right section, I don't know that it would hurt anything either. Is it
it should be specific? I mean, like, it says you believe it's in there, you're not sure, so you should make sure.
Right here.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and see it again, George. Let me see it again.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Gustafson?
Maybe as a way of helping out here a little bit. If, as I mentioned, I already think it's covered, but I think I can very easily propose a slightly rewording to the second sentence that would accommodate it, if that would help.
Which is where?
Beginning with line 14. Basically reorder the sentence to say something like, the commissioner may request... This is line 15. The commissioner may request proposals for potential leases under the C of this section if consistent with an adopted land use plan which specifically allows for the type of development under consideration, period. If the word consistent, helps.
I guess the difference there is that it's under main, up here it's under shell, right?
landed and said shall be consistent.
Yeah, and now here we see where he's putting it, gives himself more leeway.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, but the may there is just, that's may request for proposals. The consistency with adopted plan is still a guarantee.
It's still if the adopted land use plan specifically allows the type of development.
You're putting there someplace where it says that it shall. Well, it shall is right in here, so I guess that would work.
Okay. So, Representative Jackal?
Okay. Fine.
Okay, then staff, do you have that? Lila, did you get the conceptual on that? Do you have that? So, go ahead and give it go over it again to make sure we got it.
Mr. Chairman, beginning with line, actually rewording the second sentence on line 14, page 1, to read as follows. The commissioner may request proposals from potential lessees under C of this section, comma, if consistent with an adopted land use plan, which specifically allows the type of development under consideration, period.
Is that, are you deleting the first part of that sentence? Or are you leaving that in there?
I'm leaving it in. I just turned the sentence upside down, basically, and added the word consistent.
Okay, so but you're changing it. So the sentence would begin, the commissioner may...
Right. Commissioner may request proposals from potential lessees under C of this section.
If consistent
with an adopted land use plan, which specifically allows the type of development under consideration, period.
Okay, so you flip that sentence around.
Right.
Okay,
what did that do? Besides flipping the sentence around.
Well, it means the commissioner can't request them unless it is consistent with an adopted land use plan, which specifically allows the type of development under consideration, because the commissioner may do it if it's consistent. I suggest that means they can't do it if it's not consistent. But I think that takes care of that.
No, really. It sounds like I'm getting too many meetings now. Okay, it sounds like
is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, then the amendment is adopted. Representative Jackal, do you have any more? Okay, is there any other amendment? We adopted that one. There is a request from Representative Wallace that wants to hold a bill and at least to have it for one more day for consideration. Why don't we just hold here and I'll talk to Representative Davidson. Just hold for a minute. The bill overnight and try to put those changes in the bill into a CS. We'll bring it back for the committee. Hopefully, move the bill tomorrow. I would like to we have the people here on this on reclamation, but we don't have the
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We've got Dr. Rostanowski here with Wesco. I think he has some ideas on this working group draft. I think these are from
okay, let's go ahead with SB 544 And who do we have here to, Jerry?
Yeah, there you are. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Gallagher. I'm Director of Division of Mining at the Department of Natural Resources.
I'm Frank Rue, Director of Habitat Division. We thought we'd both come up here so you could put us both on the hot seat if you wanted.
Good. Okay.
With the permission of the chairman, I'd like to take about 30 seconds and kind of make sure everybody understands where we are today on the reclamation bill that's before you. The 6I legislation had a piece of reclamation in it, and it basically said if the legislature doesn't act by this June, then we adopt regs. That bill required a reclamation plan, required bonding after non-compliance, but it deferred most of the decisions, including the standard and whatever, to the reg adoption process. SB 544, the Senate bill that you have before you now, expands on a lot of that. It takes a lot of it out of the reg process and puts it in statute. There's some very important differences now. First of all, SB 544 applies to state, federal, and private lands. Applies to all lands. It applies to both locatable minerals, typical gold, silver, copper, lead, zinc, as well as sand and gravel and materials. It puts a standard in statute. That statute is what's referred to as undue and unnecessary degradation standard. That's the one that effectively BLM is operating under now. It provides for an exemption of operators who mine less than 5 acres a year. And it retains the same bonding after non-compliance, but it caps it at $750 an acre. I believe you have in your packets a draft called Working Group Draft Number 2, dated 5-1-90. The working group is composed of the three state agencies, DNR, DFNG, and DEC, folks from the Alaska Environmental Lobby, folks from the Alaska Miners Association, and Tanana Chiefs Conference. We took the Senate bill and started working it over to see if we could reach some agreement. I should tell you that that working group was made up of three or four geologists, a couple of biologists, and I think a guy with a degree in history. So this isn't in perfect legislative prose. The lead drafters haven't started ripping this apart yet, so you'll have to excuse some things that aren't quite perfect. We're not going to put anybody on the spot tonight and tell you that either the agencies or the interest groups support this version in front of you 100%. We reached this piece of work about 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're letting people look at it tonight and talk to their own folks, okay? We believe this takes in a lot of the good suggestions and concerns that everybody had, but I'm not going to pretend for an instant that folks are going to get up and support this right now. They're all here in the audience. You can ask them, I guess, yourself. If I could take 2 minutes, I could...
Okay. Representative Furness.
It's just a question concerning the 5 acres for the small miners. What percentage of mining activity would be within that 5 acre?
I think about half the 50 to 60% of the applications we receive are under 5 acres. Part of this is because the BLM has a 5 acre notice, and the Plaster Mountain community is very sensitive to this 5 acre level. It changes the level of their involvement with the federal government if they're under 5 acres. So mining operations have for a couple, 3 years now, strive to maintain a 5 acre impact.
Okay. One other question. As I mentioned, the 1,500 the yards of aggregate gold or gravel, mm-hmm. cubic yards here.
25,000.
We're looking here on page 2, line 18. Let's see, is a man who disturbed or
remove less than 1,500 cubic yards of gravel or other material in a year. How does that compare in relationship to the 5-acre site? I mean, are they have to move more than that in a 5-acre?
Yes, absolutely. 1,500 cubic yards is
nothing. This, this version is substantially different from the Senate version. If you want, I can go through and point out those differences to you.
No, I don't know the
difference. Whatever the committee would like. There are substantive differences, I can assure you.
But did you, what is the committee's desire? Do you want Mr. Gallagher to go through this working draft? Or?
Well, as I understand now, you've got a group that's still working. I assume that
we're
nothing
still working,
has been settled yet.
Yeah, but this is awful close. We're just down to tinkering with a couple of words.
I see.
Yeah, I'd like to do it once, rather than doing it twice. You know, two.
Are there any other comments? Then, so it is the thoughts of the committee that. So, Jerry, we are going to, the group is still working. Where's Nahana? Are we planning on sending this out and get it drafted?
Yeah, but we probably want to wait till it's done.
I mean, is there another working group? Are they having another meeting or what?
Well,
we're shooting for here tomorrow.
Yeah, this is on the calendar for tomorrow. We wanted to get a draft in front of you today. We wanted to get a draft for the interest groups to take back to their folks tonight.
Okay.
Talk to them about it.
I see.
I'm optimistic that the interest groups and the agencies will, with a minor amount of tinkering with a couple of words, will find this acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask one question?
Yeah, that's on the
In what's the effect of the $750 limit per acre?
Okay.
Well,
in the existing 6I legislation, we bond after somebody screws up with no limit.
Okay.
In the Senate bill, you bond after somebody screws up, but with a limit of 750. In this version, there is mandatory bonding for everybody from the beginning up to 750, but it's coupled with the provisions to create a bond pool for the industry.
And a 5-acre, people below 5 acres are exempt from bonding.
From the bonding, the notice people would be.
Unless they choose to be.
But this draft would effectively bond most of the bigger operations, or all of the bigger operations.
Okay. And it bonds them for 750 an acre cap.
Cap, that's correct.
So what, I mean, is that adequate?
Well, a couple of, we've been hashing this out. First of all, if the bond is the mechanism to do the reclamation, if that's your first choice, then the answer is no, it's not adequate, okay? But we have added a provision in here that, I have to find it, on page 3, under violations.
On the work draft?
On the work draft, yes. Section A of the violation says that if you violate your permit or your approved reclamation plan, you're liable for the full cost of the reclamation and administrative costs. So that the bond becomes kind of a safety net. If we go after you and we can't get money, then we're going to go after you out of the bond pool. So 750 probably isn't adequate in some cases, but coupled with this provision where we can go after you for the actual cost, and the second provision of the violations, which means we can suspend or revoke a permit, we've got a lot more clout in here than we have today. Okay? So I guess we've referred to the mandatory bonding, even at 750 an acre, as the safety net, and it's not the item of first recourse. The item of first recourse would be to go after the violator and recover costs directly that way.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Okay, that's not the way it reads me.
He automatically forfeits a bond, right?
Yes, you automatically forfeit. The way the bond pool works is you put in 10% of the bond into the pool, and you pay an annual fee of 3%. Okay. You would forfeit, you would get the 10% back at completion of reclamation. You would forfeit that 10%.
Okay, I'm not following how this bond pool works. Everybody pays in 10%?
You pay in a deposit of 10% plus a carrying fee of 3% a year.
Okay. So, and if you take off or are gone, and is the bond amount at 750 an acre or no more than 750 an acre?
It's no more than 750 an acre. In some cases, it might be less. In some cases, it would be 750 an acre.
So how big is the bond pool, I guess, is my question.
Well, actually, we were just trying to pencil that out before the hearing, and I don't have a number for you right now.
Thank you.
Representative Foster.
Yeah, I haven't looked at this in great detail, but a lot of the mining, for example, on the Seward Peninsula, generates gravel that provides all of the roads in the Nome area and the airports. As a matter of fact, the entire base for the city of Nome and some of the villages around there, including barge loads of gravel that we use to build runways down in the Yukon where there is no gravel. This gravel has been generated by the land dredges around there. Now, if they were to reclaim this, would they still be able to use this gravel?
Sure.
Like reclamation?
Sure.
Are they going to reclaim it and then dig it back up and send?
No. On page 1,
mm-hmm. I see that, yeah.
025 section B, the reclamation plan can provide for a whole bunch of uses, including trails, lakes, recreation sites, fish and wildlife enhancement, commercial and agricultural uses. So, you could actually, part of the reclamation plan would be use the gravel for whatever need, and you could reclaim it to a lake, you could reclaim it to a lake.
Okay, how about just mining for the sake of gravel? For example, Cape Nome supplied all the armored rock for the Priblas, and they're thinking of shipping some to Korea.
Right.
How do you reclaim a cliff?
In some cases, you might not reclaim a cliff.
Yeah, because this is a cliff face that they're going into, with the tremendous volume coming out with high-grade armor rock.
Right.
I mean, rock
this,
is
this doesn't
room.
Dictate what the reclamation will be. This says while you're mining, mm-hmm. you will prevent unnecessary and undue degradation.
Yeah.
And then you have to reclaim it to something, okay? In some cases, that might be stream habitat. In some cases, the cliff in itself may be an acceptable way to leave it. This doesn't dictate what the final reclamation plan will. It says that the three agencies will consult and figure out what the reclamation standard is.
That was a key provision, to look at the site and specific plan rather than trying to come up with a whole bunch of possible situations and put a standard for every situation just to have a plan.
I guess maybe, Jerry, if since you are here before us with this work draft and you're going to go back to the group, I guess maybe it might be beneficial to us if you would run through it, and if we have any directions we can send you back with, it might help the process instead of opposingly coming in, dropping a work draft in front of us and going in that process. So if you want to go ahead and do that.
Okay, and I'll be as brief as I can.
Okay.
Feel free to interrupt me. Page 1, I'll just start with 010. Section A, it applies to state, federal, and private land. And it's subject to mining operations. And this is a key, and I highlight this because in the definition section on page 3, the second definition of mining operations is where we loop in not only locatable minerals, but leasable minerals, those are material sites, and sand and gravel. So that's the tie to those other types of activities. Section B exempts coal. Coal is, of course, managed under SMACRA, and that's 2721. Section C, the key provision here is that the owner of private land may establish reclamation requirements in excess of these chapters. This isn't a ceiling. This becomes the floor.
That is, Mr. Chairman, you mean as in minimal reclamation effort?
As in
floor?
The floor. The landowner of any flavor can establish requirements beyond what is here. This is the minimum statewide.
Uh, Representative Sharp.
Just one question, while passing through it. In your work group, do you have any representatives from the gravel and sand business?
No, we do not. Although I understand that they have had some contact with the Alaska Miners Association. And likewise, just to make sure everybody understands, the work group doesn't include any of the native corporations, the for-profit corporations whose land would be included here as well, although I've had a few phone calls.
Which is significant.
Yes, sir, I would say that's a significant amount of private land, sir.
If I may, it did include Division of Land and Water, who does gravel sales on state lands, as well as DOT, who's a major gravel user in the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
On that point, Mr. Chairman, I know that there are many native corporations who were transferred liability sites, if you could call them that, and because of the arrangement, they do not derive revenue from them, but the state utilizes those sites to continue to take from them. So there would either have to be some kind of exception to that situation where a body, due to the peculiarities of the law, were given a liability for which they did not have control and would, it would seem to me, not be responsible for coming up with the plan nor the expense of reclamation in those.
The only thing I can tell you, the way this is drafted, is it's only forward-looking. It doesn't require any past or for past mm-hmm. actions or.
Oh, I see. So that is to say, then, like most of the situation is grandfathered in. What you have is what you have, and we go forward from here.
That's right.
Thank you.
As it's written here. The Reclamation Standards, Section 020, the key points here is that while you're operating, you will prevent undue and unnecessary degradation. That's essentially the BLM standard. The reclamation will be as contemporaneously as practical, and the site will be left in a stable condition. And I want to again refer you to the definitions, because stable condition on the last page, the definition, is key to making most of this work. And I'm not going to read it to you, but I just want to draw your attention to that.
On that definition of stable condition, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The phrase reasonable period of time, is there anything that we should talk about in, as regards to that phrase?
Yeah, this definition was perhaps the most important sentence in this bill, and the interest groups, the agencies, we've spent a good bit of time discussing that. The time period is critical. I think people are still tinkering around with these words, and I think all of this is subject to some further discussion, but certainly the time period is key, because I guess a reasonable period to some folks might be 300 years, and a reasonable period to others might be shorter than that.
Well, Ms. Gallagher, if I may, Ms. Chairman, in the work group, has there been discussion amongst the various interest groups, say, what, in fact, has been the discussion as regards a reasonable period of time for miners versus, say, agency personnel or environmentalists? Have you put specific numbers in there in your discussion?
We haven't put specific numbers in. There has been some discussion of that. I guess I'll speak for some of the agencies, and Frank can. I'm not going to try to speak for the miners or the environmental groups that are here. They can speak for themselves. I guess what we view is you know, the reclamation needs to be as contemporaneous as possible, and it needs to be timely. If you're gonna plant seed or whatever, that should be done really quite in a timely manner. It doesn't need to be done 10 years down the road. So I guess the point that we're trying to make here again is one of timeliness, and that's sort of these words in a reasonable amount of time.
Again, I might add that, again, you look to the site-specific plan to figure out what is reasonable. If you're in the Arctic, you would expect things to start coming back within a certain amount of time. Down in Southeast, it would be perhaps a different time. It depends on the type of operation, the type of reclamation, the type of material you're trying to reclaim. But the point was,
you didn't want it to be geologic time. You want it to be something that humans measure to give assurance that it would happen.
Mr. Chairman, since this is a very important part of this reclamation effort here, I would like to hear from both the environmental community as well as industry on their perceptions or their thoughts regards to the reasonable period of time.
Do you want it right now? I thought we'd have Mr. Gallagher run through this and then we could go ahead and go on. Do you want to do that right now?
As long as we get the opportunity, I'm afraid that we'll run out of time.
We'll have it
Okay, we'll just continue on.
Okay, moving.
Well, we'll just keep moving. We'll go through this. No,
yeah, we'll but I would at another time.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding of this, and I'm not sure the exact situation you were talking about before, where you've got a corporation and someone's operating on their land because they didn't get the right to it. I would suggest that if they've got an operation now, it would fall under the purview of this bill. Whoever is operating that area would have a responsibility to reclaim it. The landowner may not be able to invoke a higher standard if they lost those rights sometime, but the state could under this bill.
Well, that's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, if I may explain that there are certain gravel extraction sites, for example, to which the native corporations got title to the land, but the state retained the right to take out material. Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, it's a unique situation, but one which would have to be dealt with if, in fact, this becomes part of our new reclamation effort.
I believe in that case, state would have to get a permit. The state agency would have to get a permit under this language to extract the gravel, and that permit would have to include then a reclamation plan.
And I think you'd also have to see what relationship the landowner has to, they may be able to require reclamation, they may not be able to stop the extraction of gravel, but they might be able to, I don't know, mm-hmm. That sort of depends on what happened to them.
Thank you. Representative Navarre.
How does, on what this bill does compare to what the department or departments would do under the current law that requires you to do it by regulation?
Okay, there's a couple of substantive differences. First of all, this applies to state, federal, and private lands. Secondly, this includes leasable minerals, including sand and gravel. It's a very significant change. The working draft has mandatory bonding before the fact, whereas the 6I legislation would only allow us to do it after failure of noncompliance. And then this has some enhanced enforcement provisions that we wouldn't be able to use.
Representative Arthur.
This bill would apply to state, federal, and private lands?
Yes. This working draft, the way it's drafted, and Senate Bill 544 does apply.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I wasn't here for the discussion on the title, but it's my understanding that the title exempts about 60% of the mining operations in the state. Is that correct?
It exempts, your number is correct. It exempts them from certain provisions of this bill. It does not, we believe, exempt them from a reclamation requirement, and it does not exempt them from their current, on state land, it does not exempt them from their requirements to reclaim under Title 38.
But if you are a plaster miner and you have a 5-acre operation, mm-hmm. then you are exempt if it's your private property.
Well, that's not how we've written this work draft, and I can explain how we've drafted the exemption.
It may be, Mr. Chairman, that the title no longer fits.
It may be out of
work draft. We there would have to be a change.
We tried to stay in title, but we may not have been able to do it there.
Representative
Navarro. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just want to say with respect to the title, because this is something that just grates on me, with the two bodies here trying to slam a title over to the other side that doesn't allow changes, so it attempts through a tight title to limit what one body or the other can do. I think that regardless of what the title says on this bill, if we want something else in there, we ought to do it. And send them a title amendment change. If they don't like it, too bad, they don't get a bill. Because it's very poor public policy, I think, in a deliberative body like this to limit ourselves because they happen to send over an arbitrarily limited title. And I got to go.
You got to go after that, okay? Mr. Mr. Geller?
On page 1025, reclamation plan, a miner may not engage in mining until has an approved reclamation plan. Section B, after DNR in consultation with DEC and Fish and Game, will look at the reclamation, and that could be trails, lakes, recreation sites, fish and wildlife enhancement, commercial or agricultural uses. So again, you have to have a reclamation plan. This bill doesn't, this draft doesn't say what that's going to be. That's going to have to be determined on a case-by-case basis. There's going to be a lot of variation there. 030 is the bonding. The substance here is that the commissioner shall require a performance bond under this section. That shall not exceed $750 per acre. Section B is the establishment of a statewide bonding pool. We felt that if we were going to require a bond from the operators, then we also had the responsibility to construct some sort of an industry self-bonding pool. That's what this is. Section C...
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead. Back up to Section A and the $750 per acre. How much of a burden is that, in fact? Is that exceptionally low? Is it medium? Is it too much?
The bonding, like reclamation, is going to be fairly site-specific. If you're near the road and it's a fairly easy job, then it's probably going to be lower than that. If you're in a remote location where we've got to bring in equipment and do a difficult job, then it's going to be way too low. I think compared to other states, this is probably a shade on the low side. I guess our the philosophy here was that if we could bond everybody, even at a low level, we were better off than bonding folks after the fact. And secondly, we don't view bonding as the enforcement tool in this bill. There's a section on enforcement and violations. Bonding is the safety net. We think there's more effective ways to get at folks.
Well, I must say, Mr. Chairman, a safety net of $750 an acre doesn't move a whole lot of dirt for whatever you're doing.
Section C is the option. You don't have to go into the bond pool if you want to put up cash or some other instrument. That's fine. And again, Section D, if anybody wants to establish a higher bonding requirement, they have the ability to. Again, we're setting floors here.
Chairman, so the miners who would have difficult. Well, how difficult would it be, say, for the average placer miner in the Fairbanks area to get a $750 an acre bond? What kind of costs are we talking about?
Well, Charlie Bodie from Usabelli deals with bonds quite a bit. If you had a $5,000 bond, you're probably going to pay about $500 for that, if you can get it.
Yeah, I think the complexities of it are that if you were to use surface mining bonding as an example,
Charlie, you said surface mining?
Surface coal mining bonds under the Surface Coal Mining Reclamation Act. Those bonds have been extremely hard to come by. Yusa Valley Corporation was turned down by 26 companies. It's because of the nature of that. A lot of companies have not been in bonding. If you were a large multinational company and they could sell you car insurance, health insurance, and every other insurance they offered, then they'd probably sell you some reclamation bonding too. So the sources themselves have been somewhat limited. It's a new phase in insurance that hasn't had much of a track record, so the insurance companies have not really embraced it. What has occurred, however, as a result of that, is that most states who have mining have got a state bond pool, but then they try to involve it, which we are trying to do here, to where the coal mining would also be bonded under the statute, we would be allowed to participate in the bond pool, which should again help build the corpus faster, because we would be a larger contributor, probably the largest contributor into it. But you can get short-term bonding, however, it's very expensive. And again, very short duration. Normally, a year, 2 years would really be stretched in.
That's the larger operation, right? The larger operator you're talking about?
Correct. Correct.
How about, what is your knowledge about, you know, the smaller 5-acre operator? How much of a burden is it to get...
I can speak to that, because I dressed up like a miner one day a couple of years ago. I took a permit around just for a $10,000 bond, and I went to 13 insurance companies in Anchorage, and 11 of them wouldn't even talk to me. Two of them said they'd think about it, and they called me back with a no. It's not, the dollars isn't the problem. The problem is, if you could bond me to move this sign from here to here, you'd do that, because you can go out and measure it after I moved it. But reclamation and restoration is a much more difficult thing to quantify. It's hard to go out on a site and actually measure that. So the insurance companies get nervous about that. They get nervous about things that have a longer term than a couple years. So the dollar value, I guess, we haven't seen as the problem. If the insurance companies are hesitant to, in these sort of measuring natural resources, they're very hesitant about that. And I think it gets actually much more difficult for the smaller guy at the $10,000 end than the use of valleys at $1 million.
Well, I guess what I don't understand, Mr. Chairman, is what are you insuring for? You know, you're insuring for the fact that you're guaranteeing to the state that you have access to $750 an acre. If not, I mean, if that's the case, what is that? That's about, what, $3,700 or something like that.
I believe what we're trying to build is a fund so that if you're the one miner out of 100 that walks and we lose you, we can't get you in the courts for the cost, then this fund would build up, we'd be able to take the money out of that fund to reclaim your site. That's the safety net. And the way this is written, the annual fee is not to exceed 3%. We put that in there because we believe that if the fund builds up to a certain point, we've got sufficient comfort, we've got sufficient dollars in there to do the job for the next year, we could reduce the fee to 1%. But if somebody screws up, one of the miners screws up, we got to expend some of the money, then the rest of the industry is going to have to pay that to replenish the fund. That's how we see it working. It's an industry fund that pays themselves for the bad operators. That's the philosophy there.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I may, industry, in fact, is in favor of the... You've worked within an industry and...
The Miners Association is here, and I guess I'd prefer to let them speak to that.
They have a representative that will be coming up next.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
The